Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. As this year's rains retreat starts to develop, as we get further into it, as the business and the maybe tiredness or all the other bits and pieces tend to fade away, and we have more time for ourselves when we're practicing our meditation, living our daily lives, obviously one of the most important qualities to understand and to develop is the quality of mindfulness. Last week I was talking about developing mindfulness on the body for the sake of your good health, but also for the sake of developing this mindfulness. Obviously that when one sits down on one's cushion or chair or when one's walking, unless one has the mindfulness that one is basically out of control, when there's no one at the steering wheel, the vehicle just veers all over the place and sometimes crashes and goes off the road. And obviously that mindfulness is what the Buddha called a controlling faculty, and understanding that it needs to be developed. Otherwise, without that mindfulness, there cannot be any sort of development of stillness. Basically, without mindfulness, one doesn't know what one's doing, what one's up to. And sometimes, I remember the early years when I used to meditate, sometimes half an hour, 45 minutes would go past, and you didn't really know what you were doing, or sometimes you did know what you were doing, and you shouldn't have been doing it. But the mindfulness was not sharp enough to actually to stop you. And because the mindfulness was not sharp enough, you got into your old habits. And it's very clear that of all the faculties which stop those bad habits, you know, the old habits which one had before, it's that mindfulness is one of the most important aspects. But also one has to have the understanding of what you were supposed to be doing. The knowledge is also important. And I'd add a third factor there, just, you know, the will, the inclination to do what's needed to be done. You may have the mindfulness, you may have the wisdom, but you don't feel like training the mind. You haven't got the willpower, the direction, the motivation, and therefore it does not work. But when you have all those three together, you have the mindfulness, you have the wisdom and the motivation, then with those three together, the chances are that you are going to be able to get somewhere in your meditation practice and make use of your time in this monastery, especially during this rains retreat. But it's important to develop the mindfulness first of all, and that's basically the subject of this talk, to be able to cultivate and grow this mindfulness. Obviously that you have to understand what that thing is. There's been so many discussions and books and ideas of what mindfulness is, but basically a lot of times they miss the point. And mindfulness has many different sort of strengths to it and qualities to it. Obviously it's an awareness, but you probably have already understood that sometimes even in just one day you can have times when the mindfulness is so dull you can't see clearly and it's hard to focus, and other times of the day the mindfulness is quite clear. And those of you who develop deep meditation just notice how powerful and how strong the mindfulness can be. You really can have this very sharp, penetrating mindfulness. So, and that's where we need to get to, but actually how we get there is actually through, again, a training of the mind. Last week I showed just how mindfulness of the body, there's a motivation for having mindfulness of the body because it makes you have good health. And it's not that hard to do because there's many things going on with the body. The more things which are going on, the easier it is at the beginning to develop mindfulness. But because of the diversity and the many things happening, the mindfulness cannot really get that strong. It's a beginning. To really get strong mindfulness, you have to have very simple, precise objects. It's as if that you grow mindfulness, just like you grow a tree from a little seedling into this huge, big piece of timber. which is very, very strong and very powerful, in the same way that you start with just ordinary mindfulness and you build it up. And one of the most important parts of that mindfulness, which, you know, I've pointed out very often, is that really that mindfulness can only exist in this present moment and with a silent mind. So then that should be like a goal there, like this momentary awareness, and not giving too many things a name. Because when you are giving something a name, you're not really aware of the thing, you're aware of its label. Unfortunately, as Western people, many of us come with a Western education, we have been brainwashed into giving things label, giving things names so much that we actually believe the label, we never see the thing. We're not really mindful of the truth of things, we're just mindful of the words which describe them. And that means that the mindfulness is not really penetrating. So you find, as you make present moment awareness an important goal, and if you make silence and the most important thing during this retreat, you will find that the mindfulness starts to increase. You become more sharp, more aware, and more able to actually see deeply into things. Basically, you're waking up. So we have to try and train ourselves in that, train ourselves in more present moment awareness. And there's many tricks to be able to do that. You just remember, where am I? What am I doing? What am I up to? Body awareness is good, but also just reflecting where you are. That's why when, remember the way we used to do walking meditation, Ajahn Chah always used to remind you that when you start, you know, I'm starting, I'm on this end of the path. When you reach the other end, you say, I'm on this end of the path now. You sort of focus yourself at least at the beginning and the end of just one section of your walking path. At least in those ends, you're in the present moment. Even if you wander off in the middle somewhere and think about whatever, at least on the beginning and the end, you bring your mind back to this moment, right here in this place, in this time. When you train your mind like that on the walking, always bringing yourself back just on every end of the path, then obviously the next stage is to be able to be mindful in the middle of the path and the other stages of that path. So you're mindfulness, you're in the moment with what's happening at every part of that walking meditation. It's a great training because now you're training yourself to develop this mindfulness in an activity, and maybe afterwards you can be mindful when you're eating or when you are in the kitchen washing up, when you're doing the chores. You're actually there with what you are doing rather than trying to get rid of it or thinking about something else. That's why the mindfulness really is developed when you put 100% effort into whatever you're doing now. So you're not thinking of what you're going to do next in this moment. And when you start developing that training, putting everything into this moment, you are developing this quality of mindfulness. This energy which is focused into the now. So I have to do that. If I'm sort of talking to people, you've got to put all your energy into talking to people. If you're writing a letter, all your energy into writing a letter. If you are in your heart meditating, all the energy into meditating. Just putting this energy into one thing at a time. And you don't allow that energy to sort of smudge over into the next activity. One activity is finished, you really drop it very quickly. So you don't allow this like smear of one thing leading into another. So if you're walking, as soon as you finish walking, you sort of stop that walking, you sit down. And now you're sitting meditation. When you're on the toilet, you're on the toilet. When you're sort of, you know, brushing your teeth, you're brushing your teeth. Whatever it is, you really put a lot of energy and effort into just being here. And that's not just like a waste of time, it's not a preliminary practice. What that does, because you have to be active some time of the day, even if you're on retreat, by putting the energy into the moment, focusing on this moment, you find that you're developing the mindfulness factor. And by putting some awareness, watching out for the inner speech and trying to stop it early and developing moments of silence and extending those moments of silence. You know, you're finding you're developing this ability just to be here, you know, waiting, knowing, aware. It's like waiting on the moment. You're just waiting here, not going anywhere, not rushing off, but just waiting in this very moment just to be. And just fully passive to whatever's happening. It's because that the mind becomes silent and because you're not rushing off into the future. Not only is this a description of awareness and mindfulness, it's also a prescription for increasing that mindfulness. Because one of the basic rules of mindfulness, its energy is built on stillness. The more still you are, the more that mindfulness increases. And just by not giving things a name, by stopping the thinking process, it stops so much movement of the mind and does create a stillness, which creates the energy of mindfulness, which is why when people do get into these states where there's hardly any inner conversation, it starts to feel powerful. The mindfulness is becoming sharp and it feels quite interesting. And if one stays there long enough, just with the present moment and the silence, you remain there, you make sure that, you know, any thoughts come up, you don't follow them. Sometimes you just stop them. When they've come up the first time, it's quite easy to stop once you get into a fantasy, a conversation, a plan. Sometimes that builds up its momentum and it's hard to stop it once it's going fast. I used to give the old simile, it's very easy to stop a train when it's just starting to move out the station. Even though it's got a lot of weight, because it's not going fast, you put on the brakes and it's easy to stop. But once that train is hurtling along the tracks at 100 kilometers an hour, it takes a long time to stop, simply because the momentum is great. So don't allow the thinking mind to build up momentum. Stop it before it's traveling so fast, and then it's easy to stop. And as it's easy to stop, you find your mindfulness starts to increase. Somehow it's just getting that mindfulness started is the hard part. Because once it's started, because that you are more aware, more alert, you see more things, you just catch more things, it's easier to remain in the present moment, it's easier to stop the thinking. The starting is the hard part. Because when you start, sometimes you don't know really what you're up to, what you're doing. You can't see clearly. When it's very, very dark, you know, you can't even see where to put the light on. However, once you start having a little bit of light, you can see where to increase the light. And this is like the light of the mind, the mindfulness, the awareness. So the first thing to do is actually to build it up. And you do build it up by the present moment awareness, putting energy into the moment, by trying to be very silent, and to maintain that as long as you can throughout the day. The more moments you are here, the more moments you are silent, the more that mindfulness will get stronger and stronger. When that awareness gets stronger and stronger, it is like getting out of sleep. When you first wake up in the morning, maybe you are a bit dull. But after a while, you find you get your awareness, your energies up, and you can actually know what's going on. You can see things, you can know things, you're aware of things. And if you're going to start meditating, developing the mind, you need to gain that awareness. Very often what happens during the rains retreat is because that awareness starts to grow, that the dullness when you first wake up in the morning starts to disappear. Simply because that awareness is growing throughout the day, it means it's there just before you go to sleep and it's there when you wake up again. It's a wonderful thing to be able to witness, the fact that when you do more practice of meditation, more stillness, less activity, less talking, you do find that mindfulness does grow. You can see it happening. And because that mindfulness grows, not only does it make meditation easier, it also is easier to see that those defilements, those bad habits, those hindrances, you know, which usually lead you by the nose throughout the rest of the year. With the mindfulness getting strong, you can see clearly. And as you see clearly, you start to see these stupid states of mind which you sometimes get into. Those states of like getting angry at other people, getting upset at them. When you're not mindfulness, when you're not mindful, these are just old habits which keep coming up. But when you're mindful, you can see them happening. You can see them arising. You can see the consequence afterwards, what they do to you and what they do to others. So that when we see these things, we know that their pain, their suffering, it becomes easier to be motivated to stop them. And it becomes easier to be able to use that motivation to stop them. We can see them arise and we just don't want to get into that anymore. So not only do we actually see the problem, we also see the solution. A little bit of restraint. With the mindfulness, it gives restraint a possibility of happening. Without that mindfulness, you might think you're being restrained, you might want to be restrained, but you just can't do it. You're not seeing what you're doing. You're still in the dark. So as the mindfulness starts to grow, the defilements, the hindrances are easier to spot. So this becomes the beginning of our meditation practice. And as those mindfulness develops, there comes a time when it's easy to start watching the breath and start doing this meditation proper. In all the time which I've been teaching breath meditation, that sometimes that I've seen people get into the breath far too soon. When they're not mindful enough, when they haven't settled down enough, and you start watching the breath, you can't do it. Except with the force of will. And even with force of will, you can't keep your awareness there for very long. Or you start watching the breath and you soon fall asleep and get into dullness. Basically, the mind isn't ready yet to watch the breath. And having done meditation for such a long time myself, I know my mind so well, you can tell what it needs to just have its mindfulness burnished and increased, first of all. And it's not the right time to do it on the breath. I know that if I try and watch the breath, it just won't stick there. The mind's not ready, so I've got to do more mindfulness practices, waking up practices, joyful practices, things to get the energy and more focus in the moment and some more silence coming up. Because I know that when that silence and when that present moment awareness, when that mindfulness is strong enough, then it's just so easy to watch the breath. You just say, just go and watch the breath, and it's easy and fun to do. So be careful that in the Anapanasati Sutta, it's very clearly stated, the first thing the meditator do is to establish mindfulness as a priority. Where it says purakata, that's my favorite translation for that, because the word priority does mean, in the English sense, putting it in front, but it gives it the more idiomatic meaning of making it important, giving it priority. So before you even try and watch the breath, you make mindfulness the main thing. You give it priority over everything else, just to be aware, to be alert, to be awake, to be focused. Which is why we do like body sweeping or body awareness or walking meditation or whatever, to bring that mindfulness up. And once that mindfulness is good enough, you'll find that when you start to focus it, it can do so. It's bright enough, it's awake enough, it's alert enough to be able to do the job. Almost. Because the other thing the mindfulness must have is not just the alertness, not the hawk eye to be able to see what's going on. It also needs to remember the instructions. It's not just being aware, it's knowing where to put that awareness. And just to how to move it around, to know what to watch. Because sometimes if you just start watching the breath, you watch the breath go in and watch the breath go out, still sometimes it doesn't work. Which is why that for many years now, I've been asking meditators to maybe instead not watch the breath as much as watch how you're watching the breath. To put that mindfulness in what I call the space between the knower and the object of mindfulness. Because it's not just watching the breath. Sometimes people watch the breath with such a control, with such a willpower, with such expectation, with such demands, and they don't see that it's how they're watching the breath is causing the problem. They're watching it in the wrong way. And you talk about hindrances and defilements. I think it's very useful, you know, to have the framework of saying that those defilements, those hindrances, where they live is in that space between the observer and the observed. Because the breath has not got the hindrances. The hindrance is not in sort of consciousness, in knowing. The hindrances are just in between. It's how you watch that breath, whether you're watching it with craving, with desire, or whether you're watching it with ill will, whether you're watching it with restlessness or dullness or just doubt. And so I like to also, when I'm meditating, how am I watching this breath? And sometimes at the beginning, that's even more important than watching the breath itself. And if I see any sign of those hindrances or those defilements between me and the object, watching the breath, yeah, I'm desiring, I want it to be the beautiful breath and the nimitta come on. Because that's where I see that desire happening between me and that, well, you know, the consciousness, the observer, and the breath. And if I see that, the mindfulness can spot it. And the mindfulness has been taught, it carries the instructions. That is going to cause a lot of problem later on. It's going to be contrary to your goal of peace and stillness. It's not the right thing to do. So as soon as you see it, it's very easy to stop. It's one of the great things with mindfulness, especially when you are working with your mind. Sometimes all you need to do is have mindfulness spot the problem. As soon as it sees it, it's so the problem's gone. It's so easy to work the mind once you see how it works. So the main job is actually spotting and seeing the problem and seeing where it exists and how it sort of works. So if you see that desire and the space between the observer and the observed, you just stop it. No. And it's very easy to stop. Just a momentary will, momentary choice, and it's stopped because you've seen its source where it's playing around. Same with ill will. Because, you know, sometimes, why is it we can't stay with the breath? Because you don't like to stay with the breath. You have ill will towards it. It's not good enough for you. It's not pleasant enough. And you want something else which is more pleasurable. Some sort of fantasy or a cup of coffee or something. And that's why that you can't stay with the breath. And that's a bit of ill will. You're not happy with that breath. Amazing thing with that, you know, not being satisfied with your meditation in this moment. I'm not talking about the overall. In this moment, if you're not satisfied, you've got no contentment there, of course you're going to wander off somewhere. You can't stay still. A lot of that is ill will. And if you can see that, it's very easy to stop it immediately. Just, I've got no ill will towards this breath. Just even though it's a bit unpleasant, that's okay, that's nature. And as long as you leave it alone for a while, with any object of meditation, when it first arises, it's always a little bit uncomfortable. It's not so pleasant. That's its nature. I know that long enough now that I just allow it to be, even though it's a bit unpleasant. Sometimes when you make a transition from one meditation object to the next, this is a natural transition, say from the breath to the beautiful breath. At first it's not so beautiful. You sort of say, should I go back to just the ordinary breath? or the beautiful breath to the limiters. Sometimes the beautiful breath, which is so nice and peaceful, you've got this big bright light coming up to disturb you. But I know now that this is, whenever there's a transition, there's always a little bit of disturbance. And I'm patient enough. Sometimes the patience is enough to allow the ill will to sort of fade away. So the mindfulness is there. It sees that this is an unpleasant, or it's got an aspect to it which is unpleasant, and instead of having ill will there, you just stop that and replace that with patience, with kindness, with gentleness. In fact, those are the three things I always try and put between me and the object. My mindfulness focuses on that space between the observer and the object of meditation, and it puts those three things, letting go, kindness and gentleness, the three aspects of Samma Sankappa, or right intention, right thought if you like, right aspiration. I don't know what you wish to call it, but you understand what it is when you call it. Putting, letting go, putting kindness, putting gentleness between you and the object. So you're not trying to get something, you're not having ill will, you're being kind to this object. That's what you're putting between you and the object, and you're being putting gentleness in there, not force, not aggression. If you put those three positive things in the space between you and the object, and you're mindful to make sure they're there, the breath becomes just so peaceful and so smooth. Sometimes I've called this being mindful of the law of karma, because it's the what you put between yourself and the object, that's the karma you're making now. The object is not the karma, that's the result of the karma. The active karma which you're doing now is how you're watching this, the sort of attitude you have to what you're experiencing. Whether you're sort of watching this trying to get something else, trying to get rid of something else, whatever, that is like the karma. And I know that that karma, that sort of disturbing karma, is only going to make bad things happen in the future. But when I put these positive qualities of letting go, of kindness and gentleness between me and the meditation object, I know that's the most pure, beautiful, wonderful karma you could possibly generate, and that has to lead to positive, wonderful consequences, and it does. So it's the karma I put into this moment, which is letting go, kindness and gentleness. And that's why I say I make peace with every moment. Be kind to every moment. Be gentle with every moment, no matter what it is. And once you're making good karma in this moment, of course, the results are peace, the meditation gets deep, and you have a wonderful time. So by putting a bit of mindfulness in the space between you and whatever you're watching, and making sure that that mindfulness is informed by Dhamma, that what you're putting in there is the positive, good karmic qualities, you find that the breath does become peaceful and smooth and light and beautiful. So you're putting some attention into the how, not so much the what you're aware of. See, this is mindfulness which is strong enough to be able to see these qualities, and it's informed enough to know where to look and what to look for. So you see, the mindfulness by itself is not enough. It has to be what Ajahn Chah, we always used to call sati with panya, mindfulness with wisdom. Sometimes, you know, you call that sati sampajanya, same thing really. But here we call it mindfulness with wisdom. And it's the wisdom of knowing the instructions, knowing what to look for, knowing where to look. If you do this, it's amazing just how it increases the ability to develop deep and powerful meditations. Because you're just watching, you can see what you're doing, you can stop the negative forces or the negative karma, put positive karma in there, and it starts to work. So you start meditating, you might be tired, you might be restless, the meditation seems to be not good at all, you make peace with it, let go, be kind, be gentle. And you find that it's so easy to watch the breath. The breath changes. its quality, its attractiveness, its stability and peacefulness changes because you made the karma to change it, which is letting go, kindness and gentleness. And as that breath becomes more still, the mindfulness, because of the stillness, the mindfulness gets more share of the energy and starts to become more powerful. And you go through this development of mindfulness. With its power, it's like turning the lights up in your mind. You can see deeper, you can see more. You're just more discerning. You're just watching this mind. And there are some types of defilements which you never saw before because they were too subtle. But with the lights of your mind turned up brightly, you can see them. You can actually see just what stops this breath turning into the beautiful breath. A lot of it you can see yourself expecting or trying too hard. And it's so hard sometimes to see that you're trying. If you're not mindful enough, it just is a habit you've done so often throughout your whole life. It's such a common thing to you, you just don't notice it. But as the meditation increases and the mindfulness gets more powerful, you can start to see these subtle defilements. And you need to have that degree of mindfulness to see those subtle defilements and know exactly where they are. They're not in the object, they're not in you, space between you and the object. How are you watching the breath? Is there expectation, anticipation? Or sometimes you can even notice fear there. The fear to go deeper because you think you're not ready, you know, to give up everything yet. You don't want to go too deep. You notice these things because your mindfulness is strong. It's amazing what you see inside of yourself in these stages, which is why that this path of developing anapanasati, developing meditation on the breath, leading to nimittas and jhanas, this is insight meditation. You get insight into the incredible, powerful defilements and subtleties of those defilements and the way they work and where they work as you go along. You have to. Without those insights into the problems, you'll never be able to transcend them and go deeper. So you're seeing some amazing things of how your mind works and these subtle, stupid defilements, which promise you what they will never give you. And after a while, you understand them. You see their game. You can stop them very easily. Once you see them, it's easy to stop. It's the old Buddhist simile of once you notice Mara, all you need to say is, Mara, I know you, and Mara slinks off and goes away. Each one of these defilements, once you know them, they just slink off and disappear, and they don't bother you again for days. So this is how we approach these. So this mindfulness to see very deeply, to understand what's going on, and then eventually we can get somewhere. And as we develop that mindfulness, it gets more and more subtle. Because it gets more energy, it can see more. The mindfulness actually starts to brighten up, and it's that joy which goes in the way you're looking at things, which makes the breath beautiful. There's a whole process happens here. It's a cause and effect dependent upon each other. As the mindfulness gets its energy, it becomes brighter. As it has that energy, it also becomes a happy mindfulness. And that's basically what any teacher would want of their disciples, to get this beautiful, happy mindfulness. And a happy mindfulness is also a playful mindfulness. And it's playful because it can take an object, turn it around which way and that way. So if you're watching the breath, you can really understand it backwards and forwards. And it's fun to do, which is why it's called a beautiful breath. The breath is just the breath. It's the beauty. It's just the way we look at it. We're becoming far more powerful and more penetrating with our mindfulness. So mindfulness is not some separate entity. It's bound up with stillness and with joy and obviously with wisdom. It carries the instructions. And the more powerful that mindfulness is, the more it remembers. It just knows what to do. It's been well trained. And as it knows what to do and sees how it all works, it gets very easy to go into the deeper parts of meditation. Mindfulness understands the power of stillness. You understand whenever you move, you disturb everything and you take away the energy and you take away the depth. Every time you move, the mindfulness decreases in its power. It gets duller. But every time you just stay there, still, peaceful, not doing anything, not trying to get anywhere, being more fully where you already are, the more still you are, the more that mindfulness increases. So mindfulness job soon becomes not so much watching your object anymore, but making sure you don't move. This is where you get the mindfulness, like the Ajahn Chah, the still forest pool. You're not just watching the animals come out to play in that famous simile of the still forest pool. You're also watching your body so it doesn't move. This is a simile. Ajahn Chah making sure his body doesn't move so he can watch the animals come out to play. The meaning of that simile is you're watching your mind, making sure that doesn't move, so the nimittas can come out to play. But the mindfulness is focused on the stillness, making sure that you don't tremble. And it can do that, and it can hold things still once it's aware and powerful enough. And with that degree of mindfulness and power, you can hold a nimitta. You know how it's done. You don't react. You don't get afraid or excited when these things happen. Which is why that sometimes when these nimittas come up too soon, the reason I say just forget about them, they're not important, don't pay too much attention to them, is because your mindfulness is not strong enough yet. You can't handle them, basically. You get excited, and sometimes if you watch it for a few moments, just the whole meditation falls apart. So you have to build up enough mindfulness, enough stillness, first of all. As far as knowing what to do, you should have heard that from me so many times, you should know that by now. But without the knowledge is okay, but without the awareness, without the strong mindfulness, again, that you won't be able to succeed in having a beautiful nimitta and having it just so still and stable that it's just resting. Once you can start to do that, again, the mindfulness increases again. You're really getting into the real beautiful, juicy parts of meditation. High mindfulness, high bliss, and this is where you really enjoy yourself. And it's not just for the sake of enjoyment, there's always a sense of incredible, profound things are happening here. And you sense that this is deep, this is amazing, this is wonderful. But you do need to get that mindfulness strong. Usually when you come out of those stages afterwards, even nimitta stages, just the mindfulness has been empowered. Which is why that when you come out afterwards, you're not sleepy at all. Nor can you get argumentative. You can see just so deeply and so powerfully just around you. You can feel your body. It's amazing just with that degree of mindfulness, just how you can sense any tension or tightness or sickness or pain in the body. And just how when you do body awareness with that degree of mindfulness, what I usually say, you just zap things. It's not as if you've got some sort of Superman power. It's just nature. You just zap things. And because your mindfulness is so strong, you can just warm, ease, soothe, heal, whatever you want to do to your body. Because that's how much power that mindfulness has when you come out of even a nimitta stage. You see, your mindfulness is so strong. And it's so still, you can put it on something and keep it there. So if you really want to develop some understanding of your body and its health, or understanding of nature, or understanding of anything, anyone who's had a deep meditation and knows what mindfulness is like as an experience after that meditation, and they compare it to what ordinary mindfulness is like, they understand just why this is necessary for the gaining of real wisdom. The simile I gave years ago was like the mindfulness prior to these meditations is like, you know, having the strength of a little spoon to dig a huge hole. But afterwards, when you come out, the mind is so strong, it's like one of these big earth movers, these big backhoes, who can dig out so much so quickly. You're just in one scoop. Your power and penetration is so much greater. But again, it's not just the ability to have insight. After those deep meditations, the mindfulness also has its energy and joyfulness. You become a happier person. It's so lovely to see that when people just had nice meditations and the mindfulness is so strong and they're just so happy and joyful. Everything turns them on. Just whatever they look at becomes beautiful and delightful, and just it's amazing just how deep you see. This is like the happiness of monastic life. And it's great to be able to develop that. There's no reason why you can't. Again, you have to develop the meditation from the beginning and the mindfulness at the beginning, and you build it up. Sometimes teaching this stage by stage, you say, I can do this first stage, so I can do the second stage, so I can do the third stage. And when you actually see the rungs in the ladder, you can see, well, I can get to the next rung. So get to that next rung, and then go to the next rung, and then the next rung. When you just see the bottom of the ladder, and someone talks about the top of the ladder, you don't know what's in between and how to get up there. It becomes quite dispiriting. When you know how you can do it, and you've gone up some of those rungs of the ladder, and sometimes you've gone up, you know, very high. So it can be done. You know how it's done. And by developing that motivation, that mindfulness, you find you can do it. And of course, you can get far deeper than that, but that becomes just quite easy afterwards. Once that mindfulness becomes that powerful and strong, then actually you can see the problems which stop you getting further. And if you can't see those problems, you can come to sort of, you know, like monks and teachers, and they'll tell you exactly what to look for and where to look for it. And sometimes the next time you meditate, mindfulness goes there. You see what the problem is, why you can't stay with the nimitta, or why you can't take the nimitta into the jhanas. The mindfulness can see the problems there. And once you can see the problems, of course, the path into those states is now open. You see what you did wrong. You can see that habits. And again, what mindfulness does, it gives you the opportunity of breaking those habits. Once they are seen, they can be stopped. I know you, Mara. And then you have freedom to go very deep in the meditations. So the mindfulness is a practice which we should highlight. It's an important part of the retreat period. It's something which without mindfulness we just waste a lot of time, we get frustrated and we feel sort of bad about ourselves and think, what's the point? So at the beginning of the retreat you have the opportunity to develop that mindfulness. It's worthwhile doing, putting effort, putting care, putting importance on the development of that mindfulness. You wake up, you get more energy, more discernment, you can see the problems, you can solve the problems, you become peaceful, wiser, more still and happier, and meditation gets much easier. So remember to develop that during the day. Walking meditation, this end of the path, that end of the path, the middle of the path, eating, whatever you're doing, make mindfulness important. And then when you sit meditation, you'll have that mindfulness there. Present moment awareness and silence is an important foundation of mindfulness. Put the mindfulness in a space between you, the observer, and whatever you're experiencing, whatever you're watching, whatever your meditation object is, because that's where the action is. And when that mindfulness is strong enough, you can get rid of the grosser defilements. When the grosser defilements are gone, the mindfulness will be increased. You'll be able to see the more subtle defilements. When they're gone, the mindfulness will be even stronger, and you'll be able to get rid of the most subtle defilements. And then you're free, the path is cleared. And you can watch the breath, and it gets very peaceful and smooth, and get wonderful meditation, sit for hours, and really sort of surprise yourself of how deep you can go, and how peaceful and beautiful it can all be. you're on the path. When mindfulness gets very, very strong, who knows, you may even be able to see the deepest Dharma of all, of non-self, of impermanence, of the Four Noble Truths. Maybe this rains retreat, you can end suffering. Why not? Give it a try. You're here anyway for 3 months. See what you can do. So by developing very strong and powerful mindfulness. That's the talk this evening.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Saṅgho Saṅgha.